want to break into the system.
Someone without access to the exam.
I have been doing a little hacking in here, as a matter of fact.
Computers and the programs will start thinking, and the people will stop.
I still don't understand why you want to break into the system.
Because, man, somewhere in one of these memories is the evidence that I got in for if I can reconstruct it.
All right, everyone, welcome to the June 15th edition of In the Now. I'm your host, Slip Mode, with...
I'm Bob, with two B's.
I'm Spike, with one K.
And Meme, with two M's.
Awesome. We are coming to you again, bi-weekly, of course, bringing the news as usual. How's everyone been doing?
Oh, relatively decent.
I've been okay.
Sweet.
I've been slightly below average.
All right. Right now we have Bob and JP sharing a mic, so you might see a struggle there, but we're going to work with it and pull it through.
Let's duke it out.
All right. Well, we've got a lot of interesting things to talk about this week. Lots of stuff about the SCO, Microsoft included Linux, Novell, Apple...
Extravaganza.
It's a big mud wrestling fight, and I'm waiting to see when the top comes off. Okay. All right. Well, I'm going to lead into our first headliner of the day, which is UK Council to dump Windows for Linux. Local authorities in Newham and Nottingham are expected to migrate more than 10,000 desktop computers from Windows to Linux.
Woohoo! Go Linux!
Woo! Let's see. They're examining the feasibility of shifting their... Actually, it's 11,500 people to shift them from Windows to Microsoft, but they expect to do it by the end of the year.
Be interesting to see if the EU follows what the UK does.
Possibly. Because they are a main factor of that region. You know, they set the pace for a lot of stuff over
EU,
there.
EU, that is Europe, correct?
Yeah, European
All of
Union.
Europe? All right.
The super state.
Keep it right there.
There we go. Help you guys share the mic a little easier. All right. Well, that was just a small announcement on the behalf of the Linux there. And as we've talked about before, patching is a very important thing to keeping your system up to date. And I just read a little bit about Microsoft as far as they're going to get a little bit more efficient about their patching. The company pledged Tuesday, which was back, I think it was like June 4th, to improve its system for sending out security fixes, patches, and updates to existing products. And basically their software, 95% of the attacks happened after a patch for a known software vulnerability was issued. They're going to do...
Cool slammer.
Yeah, definitely. They're going to be doing that, and also, just from the article, just to mention it, and we've talked about it previously, the security audits that Microsoft has been going through called the Trusted Computing Initiative. It basically just reiterates that they are doing that for all their products and in their ongoing development, making sure that things are secure. So, hope it pans out. Good luck to them, and everyone's looking at me, and hope that works out for them.
I want to try not to turn this into a Microsoft bashing show, so I'm just going to keep quiet.
Good luck with that campaign.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's good to say that they've done that. It's good to show that they're starting to do that. How well they're doing it, or how much progress they've made, is a whole other story.
Or if they're just doing it for publicity.
Which that could be also true as well.
They're definitely doing it for publicity. Whether they're doing it exclusively for publicity is another question.
Definitely.
Answer, yes.
I have to question the subject of timing, though, because they seem less than proactive and more reactive. It's more like after spin that they announce these things.
Yeah, you're totally right. Microsoft's always been a reactive company. They've always tried to push like their products on you, and when they've seen that they've had downfalls or embarrassments, and actually it's not even initially after the downfall, the embarrassment. It takes quite a bit of downfall and quite a bit of embarrassment to finally push them to get things done right. And that's my personal belief to why a lot of these things are like viruses and whatnot and exploits and stuff are personally... is my personal reason as to why they're developed is actually to embarrass them. It's not really, you know, to gain access to the machines. I'm sure that's part of it, but I think it's more for embarrassment. And maybe it's someone that, you know, is doing it to try to get them to get off their butts and do something about it. So, you know, they've talked about it, and we're going to talk about a worm a little bit later on. That's another huge problem that occurred with Microsoft machines.
If I could interject, one thing I'd heard, and this is just a piece of scuttlebutt, someone was saying that this was their remedy for handling intellectual property infringement in People's Republic of China, because obviously they're notorious for appropriating protected, you know, software and other published content, and this is a way for them to, in effect, disable people who are, you know, guilty of piracy for the most part.
That's part of it, and actually that's one of the big reasons that they're, well, partially, a lot of overseas people are starting to use like open source now, and that's another thing they're scared about because they don't want to pay for it. Plus, you know, in their economies, they may not have a good enough economy, but the same dollar amount it is for us to pay for Microsoft XP per se here is the same dollar amount it's there, and that could be somebody's whole monthly salary, you know, to actually pay for it. So that's why pirating is really rampant, and they've
it takes like a year's salary to pay for an ordinary television in China. So you consider these software licenses that we're accustomed to paying, that would just be just too exorbitant. They can barely afford the hardware.
Yeah, it's insane, and that's why, I mean, a lot of our computers get you know, from countries like ours and other countries that have decent economies. Well, older computers will get shipped over there and sold. Like, for instance, actually, here's a small side note, but it goes along with it. It's hard to buy or get parts for a car in Florida, especially in Miami, if you want to go to a junkyard and like buy a part.
They go to Cuba, right? A lot of
them. They go to Cuba, that's right. Every car that they can that's decent enough, they buy it for scrap and put it on a boat and send it to Cuba, and that's how Cuba fixes their cars or takes these cars and like grabs all the parts and puts one together. So it's...
I've heard that in certain third world countries, like... Some of the people don't have enough to eat, but they all have television sets. Like, it's just so pervasive that they get our old technologies get shipped over there that reaches a crazy degree.
Yeah, pretty insane. Well, here's a technology that Microsoft has been pretty interested in getting into that market, and now it seems like they're pretty interested in controlling it. It's basically, we've talked about the Xbox as far as Microsoft's move to getting into the entertainment video game industry. We've also talked about the home station that is supposed to be Microsoft's all-in-one box. Your DVDs, your MP3s, your CDs, your video games, possibly your internet connection, jukebox, and...
Your VHS,
no.
they just want to own the world, that's all.
Well, they see that it's a large market. Who is it for AOL? Steve Case?
Yeah.
Steve Case, you know, got his own movie company, Time Warner. And maybe Microsoft sees that there's a lot of money in that area, too. So they're going to try to do what they can.
You say that like he went down to the store and bought his own movie company.
Well, actually, it's more like the new math. You know, if you don't understand software and you don't understand entertainment, just think of what you could do.
Yeah. Basically, it talks about, the news is that Microsoft finally was granted U.S. patents for interactive entertainment. And what they did was they wrote up a copyright, or basically the descriptions of many interactive entertainment devices, ways to create it, like, what is it? It's not a theory, but it's the overall collective of how it works.
Yeah, their topology, their schema. That's what's so disturbing, though, is today it's not just a matter of patenting an actual useful technology. It's the ideas. And it used to be you couldn't patent an idea.
Yeah.
I mean, nowadays they're actually patenting genes, you know, things that actually exist. And a company will say, we patent this gene or whatever, and then anybody wants to study it has to pay them money.
Yeah. Yeah, they have, you know, diagrams and actual figures, description. I think they had examples, maybe not examples of code, but it was pretty detailed, and they're trying to do what they can to lock that market on top of things,
And they were granted that patent.
Yeah, they were granted that patent. I don't know if they gave somebody a nice Christmas bonus, but they definitely got it.
Which, even though it's been granted, there's still... It can still be challenged in court.
Definitely.
If it can be proved that basically there was pre-existing art that others were already using that technology, or that it was obvious to someone in the industry. So.
Yeah, I think that, and I mean, I'm sure everyone here has deducted that, it's just, they probably knew that ahead of time. They just wanted to get just yet another bit of foothold if they could.
I mean, even though obviously video on demand and TiVo-like services are obvious to anyone, since they exist already, they're still probably going to keep some of that patent, so, you know, why not go for the whole chunk?
Yeah, for sure. And, I guess we'll bring it up, because we've talked about it before. We talked about the release of the Hacking the Xbox book that was out, and that's pretty neat. Because I know Microsoft, since we're talking about this kind of thing, they're probably going to try to implement controls in the device, and, of course, you know, bust you with the DMCA if you start taking it apart and circumventing it and getting, you know, websites taken down and all that junk. And I know that they have, they actually had, I read once, it was a job offer on their website for people that have circumvented Xbox technology security controls and whatnot, and they'd like to hire them to basically help lock it down because
they basically go to jail.
Well, that may be that, huh? Well, they want to hire them to lock it down because the hackers are just too smart nowadays, I guess. Or maybe they've just been too smart always.
I think it has more to do with agility. Big, you know, institutions and corporations are just very slow to do things. They're so metastasized with bureaucracy. They just move much slower, and small people move quick, but it's easier for them to just steal their ideas.
Yeah, very true. Plus, you don't see, you know, you won't hear about somebody at a company, like, pouring all night long for some reason because it's their hobby or their joy over some piece of technology and seeing how they could break it or whatnot. So, I don't know. I think the companies are starting to hire people like that, or maybe they've already been doing it in some instances to control those things, or because they realize what can happen. All right. Well, we've talked about the SCO case and all that stuff in the past, and of course we're going to give you more updates as time progresses. There is just a whole slew of crap going on. You know, first let's give you a small background. Basically, SCO was suing IBM for using, because IBM sells Linux, and they can't sue all the open source developers because, well, they just don't have enough money to cough up for SCO to actually benefit. So they went after a big target, IBM, and the problem is, what they say is that Linux has used code from SCO, and we are not paying licensing fees for it.
That sounds like the old Unisys thing over the GIF standard. You know, they wait and wait and wait and figure it out, and then they want to retroactively come after everybody.
Yeah. I'm going to say a few things about that before I even progress into even deeperness. One thing I was thinking is that they want money for licensing. Do they want the full cost, or do they want just the... If 0.0001% of the code was used in Linux, should we only pay 0.001% of the license fee?
I think what it is, they want to achieve economies of scale, so they let things saturate, then they run the numbers, and they, you know, and it's all about economies of scale, because some microscopic, minuscule amount can be amplified by the number of violations.
Yeah. They finally showed the beans, I guess, to a small group of people that actually had to sign a non-disclosure agreement. Basically, this man here, when it rolled out evidence of large blocks of Linux code that contended that it came from SCO Unix, Analysts who saw the samples of the allegedly stolen code said the evidence damaged could damage the Linux community if it had a formidable case. If everything Scott showed me today is true, the Linux community should be very concerned, said Bill Claybrook, who's research director for Linux and open source software.
Is this part of the Linux kernel or what?
It's supposed to be part of the Linux kernel, I'm assuming, or maybe the init system. But I think it's kernel code. It's either kernel code or the init system or both. It's not stuff like sendmail and all that other stuff.
Were they like subpoenaing Linus Torvalds or?
No, they're going after the guy that's got the box, which is IBM.
They're going after anybody who is selling a product. Same thing seems to be happening with Apple and OS X because they were based on a mock kernel, and now out of the woodwork, these people are coming after Apple because they see this is a tangible, product.
Commodity.
Ships, yeah.
Yeah, but if it's in the kernel, then he would have knowledge. I mean, he would be. Seems like he'd be involved in the process somewhere.
Let's address that.
The idea was that it used to be free. And now they want
to
say that it's
free.
Not free. The code that,
okay.
that they're using in the Linux kernel. It used to be open and anybody could use it. And now, SCO, since everybody's using it, they want to make some money off of it.
See, that's very similar to what happened with Unisys and the GIST standard. It was kind of like you can't proliferate a industry standard till you achieve widespread adoption of it.
Exactly.
And they let it aggregate to a point, and then they come in there and go, oh, you've made money, now we want our money.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, the plot has thickened in many ways. Originally, it was thought that SCO, and it could still be thought that SCO was just trying to make a buyout. We did actually talk in the I know it was the last show, the show before that Microsoft actually, for some reason, stepped in and sells SCO licensing now, which is really strange. They actually sell SCO licensing. They're just one of their licensing distributors. But we did talk about the possibility of, and people have thought about it in the general community and things that people know what's going on in the case, but they did want to try to finally get a buyout for their company and get assimilated and whatnot. And then we're going to go a little deeper and talk about how SCO possibly violated the GPL. And I'm going to read straight from this article here. GPL is a general public license for Linux. Some members of the open source community are claiming that the SCO group may have violated the terms of the GNU GPL, which is the general public license, by incorporating source code from the Linux kernel into the Linux kernel personality feature found in SCO Unix without having the changes sent back to the community or displaying copyright notices attributing the code to Linux. Other sources close to SCO, who spoke on condition of anonymity, told eWeek, which is where this article comes from, that parts of the Linux kernel code were copied in the Unix System 5 source tree by former SCO employees, former or current. That could violate the conditions of the GNU GPL, which states that any amendments to the open source code used in commercial product must be given back to the community, and the copyright notice must be displayed attributable to Linux. The source who has seen both the Unix System 5 source code and the Linux source code, and who assisted in SCO with a SCO product to bring the two kernels closer together, that the SCO basically re-implemented the Linux kernel with functions available in Unix kernel to build what is now known as the Linux kernel personality (LKM) with SCO Unix. The LKM is a feature that allows users to run standard Linux applications along with standard Unix applications on a single system using the UnixWare kernel. So that is that's another thing people are saying, look, if everyone's going to start putting their stuff on the table, then all right, let's go ahead and do it. So that's one of them. That's one of the things that's popped up. And another thing that's popped up is that Novell is claiming that they own Unix and SCO doesn't, so they don't have the right to sue IBM.
I think it's a Microsoft conspiracy.
Controlled by Ronald McDonald.
Ronald McDonald. Yeah.
You know the actors that play Ronald McDonald make mad money? Did you know that?
I always wanted to play Grimace.
The guy who does Ronald McDonald on TV makes like $300,000 a year.
Jeez. Man. Welcome.
It doesn't make sense that they move to litigation, they escalate, and you know, take you down to, you know, DEFCON 8 before making some overtures. Like, was there any foreplay, or they just go to court?
Yeah, yeah, definitely. And once again, I'll read straight from the article. SCO Group on Thursday discovered a 1996 amendment to the contract under which Novell sold many of its Unix assets. And the amendment appears which SCO, at least some of the Unix copyrights that could bolster its potential legal claims against the Linux users. The amendment appears to reverse a provision in the original 1995 asset transfer agreement under which Novell sold much of the Unix businesses to SCO's group predecessor, the Santa Cruz operation. But specifically excluding copyrights from the transfer, the amendment modifies the exclusion so SCO seems to receive at least some Unix copyrights. The amendment that came from Novell's attention today appears to bear a valid Novell signature, and with language both convoluted, seems to support SCO's claim that ownership of some copyrights for Unix did transfer to SCO. Novell said that the amendment does not address ownership of patents, however, which clearly remain with Novell. So that is something that's going to be a battle in court to prove that. And then on top of it, or along with it, is that what was it again? Now, if you Jay or Spike, do you want to tell us about the Apple?
Oh yeah, I believe it. Apple on some marketing pamphlet they were using put the Unix trademark or the logo, and SCO is suing them, saying that they use their trademark without permission, and Apple is countersuing, saying that Unix has become a generic term and therefore has lost its right as a patent because they haven't vigorously defended it as a trademark. So,
yep.
Yeah, these things don't happen overnight. I mean, you know, it takes a long time to get a product in the pipeline, and it seems to me that what they're doing is this is a test case. It's actually going to chill the industry because a lot of people don't want to adopt the standard until it achieves some degree of ubiquity or market saturation.
Yeah, I know there are laws concerning how they can't just wait forever. There are laws about that, but I don't know specifically like how long they have to wait until.
Yeah, there should be a statute of limitations.
Yeah.
Like, why can't they? Why didn't they do this sooner?
Yeah, it's pretty ridiculous. But I mean, this could be. I don't know how serious an issue it is, but could this be like a death blow to open source if SCO is ruled as the. You know, if Linux is ruled as violating, and then they can charge any amount of licensing fee they want.
Well, I was tongue-in-cheek when I said it could be a conspiracy, but what I mean by that is if they're testing the waters for this, everybody in the industry is watching. And if they get a favorable ruling, it's really going to affect, you know, how people do development in the future.
I don't know. I think that if SCO actually does win, and there's this little minuscule piece of code in the Linux kernel that we can't use...
They'll just remove it.
Exactly. And it's not like we can't find another way to write it. It's open source. We can do anything.
Yeah, maybe they'll hit, you know, somebody like IBM for some cash, but...
I think it's a money thing, because the economy's bad. I mean, I remember just a year ago, Sun Microsystems said, oh, we're going to be flush for 7 years out. Now they're hurting. And it's like, I think the economy is downturned so bad, these companies are crunching numbers and trying to find any way they can to fill their coffers. And, you know, it's like they're data mining the legal issue just to bring money in.
Yeah, but a lot of these big corporations are already... really hesitant to jump into open source. You know, they're thinking about it, looking at all the positives and negatives, something like that. Even if IBM has to turn over a huge load of cash, that could really make a lot of companies think twice about going in that direction. Like, oh yeah, they could think, we don't know, maybe there's other proprietary code in there somewhere, somebody's gonna come down the road. It's a possibility.
What are you gonna do when China starts doing this stuff on a broad scale? They're already doing it with movies, you know. They you know, rip everything
with everything, actually. Yeah. Over there, anything that can be copied and transferred, they're doing it.
And like Cisco routers, for instance, all the manufacturing that was going on down there, they're selling stuff that not only, you know, works, but it's actually more compatible and it's cheap.
Well, I don't know. It's hard to say. I mean, I honestly think that, oh yeah, and of course there's always we haven't really talked about it, we don't have much facts to support it, but there's always the, you know, the idea that Microsoft, you know, kicked SCO and said, hey guys, why don't you go look in your books over there and see if you guys might have some Linux code, and, you know.
Well, consider this though, you know, companies cannot license technology if a company chooses not to do so.
Yeah.
And what oblique theory would be that if they want to control the industry rather than attacking a company outright or attacking a platform outright, what they can do is basically pressure somebody and say, we're not going to give you favorable licensing or lenience in one area as long as you keep doing this.
Yeah, the crap, I think, that when it hits the fan, could be financial at the most. And, of course, there could be, like Spike said, a little bit of problem with PR saying, like, oh, you know, we don't know about this code. But in the end, I guess, like, for the good old home user like me, and, like, people that have already switched to it, I know they're not going to switch back to Microsoft or something else.
Oh, yeah,
else.
Definitely not.
But the code can be, like, stripped out, you know, changed, and be like, all right, well, we'll prorate it. We'll be like, all right, well, we'll pay you, like, this much for this amount of time using it, but your licensing fee is, like, this much for the whole SCO Unix platform, and we've only used, like, 0.10% of it, so we'll pay you 0.10% of your licensing fee, and any, like, you know...
And they'll come back and say, no, give us 40% because of damages to our reputation, and the lawyers will hash it all out. And then the lawyers walk home with 38%, and then...
Yeah, then the lawyers got all the money in.
Sounds like racketeering. And like
that's why you used to
want to
be a lawyer, isn't that right?
That's why I used to want to be a lawyer.
Oh, okay, still want to be a lawyer. Right.
Well, it's the new alchemy.
Not one of those, though.
I mean, you can make shit out of thin air if you're a lawyer.
Yeah.
Wouldn't you rather make gold?
Anything can be turned into money nowadays. I mean, you know, they make the shit up out of thin air.
All right.
Oh.
Yes.
I forgot I was now an RFA.
Yeah. No, that's all right. I'll leave that in. Okay. So that's so much crap. We'll be watching as it goes. Oh, yeah. Well, I'll just add this, too. Because I actually, it's really nice. So some people start posting stuff on, like, Slashdot and other places, the conference calls that SCO has and stuff like that. So I actually sat in on some of those, and it was pretty interesting. Yeah, SCO's been in debt for quite some time. They're actually, like, starting to actually become not profitable, but they're heading to, getting closer to their margin to getting rid of their debt. They're basically going back up, but they're not losing any more money right now. So they're hurting for cash, and...
That's what I mean. I think, you know, it's like all of us, you know, when you start hurting for money, you're not petty ordinarily, but then when you get crunched a little bit, you start looking for money anywhere you can find it.
Which reminds me, Slip, when I bought you lunch like 2 years ago at Carl's Jr., can I get back that $4.78?
I've never eaten at Carl's Jr., so. But the, I just think that there's something bigger behind it, obviously. I think everyone else does. I think somebody...
C-word.
It's either SCO wanted to get some attention, which they probably have gotten it, or somebody went over to SCO and said, hey, why don't you guys check to see if Linux has any of your code, and then you guys can cause a ruckus, and we'll give you some money for that. Microsoft. But, I mean, it might, either way.
Well, just think of all the spyware that's out there. They're going to start data mining your own hard drive and see if you're violating someone else's... intellectual property rights based on what's cached in your machine,
Yeah.
I mean, God knows what you could find. It's like backwards messages and music.
Yeah, I had a big old...
Linux source code.
Yeah. Delete now.
Penguins are the devil.
I mean, just think if, you go visit a web page in good faith, God knows there might be about 20 intellectual property violations, sitting on your machine that you don't even know about,
Yeah, that's possible.
It's truly ludicrous. Like, everything you can think of. I've heard so many stories, I can't even keep track of banner ads, one-click purchasing. Like, every technology out there, somebody is claiming. It's like, that's the new... It's not innovation. It's like, who owned what,
yeah.
When...
And it's easy, because there's so much stuff out there. It's easy to copy it, modify just a little bit, just like they did with Morpheus.
Yeah.
And modify just a little bit and say, it's ours now, guys. And what are you talking about? It's a bunch of crap. But a lot of people are driving brand new cars because of it. I don't know. Depends on your morals. All right. Well, this is the worm we were going to talk about. Another big worm out there, which is quite malicious. Not like the other worms that either gave a little bit of access to your machine or just generally convoluted your network. This one seems to have some other things in mind. Reading straight from the article. Several antivirus companies remained on high alert Friday, which was early June, after the continued spread of the new computer worm that includes particularly malicious snooping techniques. Bugbear B, a variant of the worm released last year, installs keylogger software, backdoor software, and in some cases even attempts to control infected computers' modems. Some of the worm's functions are designed to specifically target financial institutions. The worm basically spread to 164 countries in the first 24 hours of its release. The UK-based Message Labs said it had trapped 150,000 copies of the worm by Friday, which was in early June. About one in every 135 emails scanned by Message Labs was carrying the worm. Among the victims, Stanford University, one of their main school websites, was severely impacted. And basically, a little bit more on how the worm works. The Kevin Haley Group, production manager of Symantec Security, said that the worm contains a list of 500 domains which belong to financial institutions around the world. If the virus realizes it's infected on a computer of one of those domains, it goes to great lengths to connect with the virus author. First, it installs the so-called backdoor software on infected machines, which should allow anyone with the knowledge of the backdoor to break into the computer later. But if the network connection isn't present, Bugbear then searches for a modem, enables it, then tries to dial a computer, probably the virus author. So that right there, I don't think goes along the lines of getting Microsoft on their toes and saying, look, you guys are bad security. That's actually some major maliciousness right there that's occurred in that bug. And seems like just like the slammer virus.
Bob, are you going to apologize for what you've done?
That's it, man.
What did I do?
Jeez, kids nowadays learn some code and all
their attention. I played the film.
Learn some code and all of a sudden they take over the world.
You need to stay on that medication now.
Poor Bob, gosh, getting torn apart. Yeah, so that sucks pretty bad. Another reason to stick with open source right now. It's a little safer. Or even BSD. We don't talk about that much.
Yeah, I like a marginal platform because, like, who the fuck?
Wow.
Yeah, who the heck is going to write a virus, for a platform that's not considered, to be the dominant platform?
Yeah. Yeah.
Got a bar of soap, by the way? Okay.
No, that's okay. We're all right. But anyways, what was I going to say? Oh, yeah, we talked about this before, that there are, and people don't really hear about that much, there are a large group of people out there, maybe talking about a few thousands, people out there that do exploit machines for profit. And if you haven't heard a lot of news stories about it from us here or in the news, don't think it isn't happening, because it happens quite often. And
are you talking about the Brilliant Digital fiasco?
What's that?
Well, the whole subject of spyware, obviously, is a real sore topic, but it seems that there's a lot of speculation about what the motivations might be, as opposed to just, seeing what's on someone's machine, actually using machines as a, host for actual bandwidth or for shoving ads, up an application or whatever.
Yeah. Did you want to allude more into that, or?
Well, I had heard that there were some companies that are actually investigating using a host computer so that they could actually be basically sharing that bandwidth and also using your hard drive to store ads and then serve those ads upstream.
That's sick.
We talked about that with Kaza. Because Kaza Linux is a strip. Kaza. Linux.
And the principals that were involved in, I think it was like Information Entertainment or the holding company for Kazaa, are the same people that are in Woodland Hills who run Brilliant Digital, same cast of characters.
Yeah, they did that in Kazaa. We talked about DoubleClick and some of the stuff that they do. I forget the guy's name, but we mentioned this guy that has been doing technology. Basically, like when your browser takes over your whole screen and like plays sounds and you can't close it and junk like that and logs where you're from. It's a whole bunch of nasty. I'm serious. Doesn't mean that kind of stuff, even I'm surfing the web on Linux, I'm still contributing to DoubleClick information and stuff like that when they run on certain sites. This game I love playing, I notice that when I click on their site, it goes and does a DoubleClick thing just before it starts loading the page, which really sucks. And it's everywhere, So, we've talked about it before. It's nice to stay a little safer if if you can, you know, like I'm like you can obviously see that we're a big advocate of Linux. We're obviously a big advocate of open source and stuff like BSD, and of course Mac OS X is pretty good.
You can always browse anonymously too. Like an easy way is just go to anonymizer.com, which actually I have to use since I accidentally got banned from Slashdot since I was testing a feature on my on Phoenix to check if the page has refreshed. And I set it to check every minute just so I could see what it was doing. But then I forgot about it, and I left my computer on for like 24 hours.
Oh, my gosh.
So then I got banned for pinging them like 2,000 times in 24 hours.
Oh, my gosh.
I started running.
That's like those people that accidentally write those worms and they hit 50,000 computers. And whoops.
So, yeah. So now I bookmarked the anonymized page. But
awesome.
Well, one of the nice things about, you know, using a proprietary, you know, OS, like before, you know, OS 10 was based on BSD, it was kind of nice because all these pop-ups and pop-unders wouldn't run on my platform. But now that I'm, you know, running on top of BSD, it's like everything suddenly works, and I'm being, you know, like choked to death. I started running a system monitor so they ask permission, you know, for all the things it's going to do, and I'm just shocked. I can't visit any web page with about four or five permissions coming up.
Yeah. Yeah, where you said, like ask to accept cookies and stuff like that.
Yeah, I mean, it's just rampant.
Yeah, you can't, it's just, it's like either you have to surf the web with cookies or and deal with it or not surf it at all. Because
and
it's totally
not just for the principal web page. It's for all the, you know, content that's, you know, remotely hosted, like
yeah,
ads and all the
banners
crap
and all that crap. You know, let's take a poll. Maybe we're different than the average Joe, I'm assuming, in some areas. Who here has bought something with a spam email or a banner ad? Who? I haven't. Go ahead.
Bob has not.
No way.
I wouldn't even visit an ad on principle alone.
Let's do something of our own. Let's like find some way to get all of these people in like one area and then figure out how to like teach them not to buy stupid crap from ads.
Or kill them if necessary.
If necessary, possibly. Or tear gas them and make them feel great pain. But so I don't know. There needs to be spam education. You know, I think they should actually put it in schools. Like, look, do yourself a favor. Don't click on that. Don't, like,
I think that's pronounced spam education.
Spamication.
Well, every time you see a real late model, you know, SUV or something like that, it's usually because some blankety blank has the audacity to try to make money off of ad click through, and a lot of times they're tweaking that stuff. Like, I know my former employer, we had a lot of simulated click through, for instance, which, you know, gave them the impression that there was high traffic when there really wasn't, and so they were making ad revenues, but people weren't buying anything.
Yeah.
There's got to be, like, a lot of people out there buying crap, though, because spam is, like, they make a lot of money off of it.
And just recently, okay, I've always prided, or just had a general feel-good feeling that I hadn't gotten a lot of spam. Just recently, I'm starting to get crap. So my,
I noticed a huge increase in the last month.
Yeah, just recently. And somewhere, somehow, whatever, my email address got out. I never posted anywhere, whatever. It's with Quest, so it's kind of like with AOL. You can just guess all these names.
Did you, Bob, did you say you've noticed that too? Yeah, I wonder if that's correlated to, I saw a story that Hotmail now allows scripting for sending out, whereas before you had to actually go through the user interface to send out
give
stuff.
Give me a break.
Yeah, now they allow
yeah
scripting. And
yeah, I listed them on one of these things where you email a page to someone else, you know, like a newspaper article, and as soon as I did that from one particular machine, that machine was getting tons of spam, and it was like graphical spam, you know, like HTML-type mail, real broadband-type stuff. And I'm just, and it's the same piece over and over and over again, and my filter won't get it.
It's so sickening.
I would just like to clarify that I do not use Hotmail, and I do not accept emails from Hotmail.com. It is on my blacklist.
Oh, I guess Spike can never send you an email.
That's why I got bounced. I
said,
email not
one
mail
of my other accounts.
Okay. Man, jeez. Terrible. Terrible.
Oh, that's why you got it.
Yeah.
Gosh, doesn't everyone feel this general like sense of depression now and like sickness?
Well, I did it for, you know, less than altruistic reasons.
I don't know about you guys.
I just figure anything I get for free from Microsoft is just sucking their resources.
Oh, man.
Because their stuff sucks, I guess.
Well, here's a...
And your mission failed, Bob, has become a Microsoft Bash Fest. That's predictably.
We're going to draw lots and see who goes to work for Microsoft so we can have them all.
Oh, man. You know, I guess I just felt like mentioning this. When I first went to try out Windows 2000 server, I got their like 90-day or 180-day evaluation CD. It never expired. So some people I know have been trying to.
That's pretty funny.
Yeah, never expired. I had it on for like 300 some days. Yeah, and I'm sure the same thing happens for their 2003 version too, possibly. Because you know, I still set stuff up like that for companies, yada yada yada. So I got to learn it.
You know what we could do is we could start selling all these old software licenses from Microsoft and sell them to countries like China, and then just know that there'll be hundreds and thousands of copies made of that one piece of software that we sell them on eBay.
Yeah. Interesting. I guess,
well, actually, that's you jest, but one of the codes got leaked for Server 2003. Did you see that story? And
yeah,
that mentioned that one of the codes, I believe it was Server 2000, got leaked, and that
2003. It was the
well, yeah, but I mean, it was talking about previously another one had gotten leaked, and then they traced back like 95% or something of the pirated copies all traced back to that one leak. So yeah, that can be like one copy can lead to massive amounts of pirates.
Like epidemiology, you know, like the guy that you know had sex with a monkey and gets everybody sick.
Yeah, that,
I was
going
to say that exactly.
Yeah, we talked about that in the last show, I think, or it was a previous show. But yeah, they
didn't talk about that exactly.
Not that. I wish I would have.
The other disease.
Yeah. Well, a few cons are happening. Well, one just happened and one's going to happen. SummerCon, which is at summercon.org, just happened. I believe it was June 7th through June 9th over in Pittsburgh. Basically, if you guys don't know what that is, any listeners out there, there's a few like tech underground, I guess per se, non-corporate sponsored cons that happen during the year. One's DEF CON, there's SummerCon, there's HAL, which is over in the Netherlands. There's the HOPE Conference that happen like every other year. This SummerCon is very much like they're very much the same in essence. It's very tech related. They have speakers that speak on various subjects. There is usually a huge LAN for people to go and play like Capture the Flag, like hacking into the machines, or just general internet use if you want to do that. And people just go there to hang out and maybe meet IRC buddies that they've talked to. Well, that SummerCon is over, and DEF CON will be starting in August. That's definitely a good conference to go to. It's becoming a little bit more commercialized over the years, but it's still a fun gig to attend. That's I think it's August 1st through the 3rd in Las Vegas, Nevada. And it's very cheap to fly from Phoenix, where we're at, over there. So I think I'm definitely going to go.
But you can make up the savings in gambling.
Yeah, because that's the most educated decision you could use with your money is. Again, I think gambling is the stupidest thing, period. I don't understand
unless you're counting cards.
Yeah, unless you're counting cards or willing to trade the money for the entertainment value.
You're only gambling when the odds are against you.
If you're counting cards, it's not really gambling, is it?
That's right. Absolutely.
Well, I guess we've gone on a side note, but honestly, we all know that the odds are totally against you. So why would you like buy into a product that you know is going to be non-beneficial to you right up front? I mean,
pathological.
Smoking, same reason.
Yeah,
I guess.
The opiate for the masses, like lottery tickets.
Well, we weren't, I wasn't with this, I was with VR. We did an impromptu show before the June 1st show. We actually did ahead of time because I went into Miami that weekend, so I wasn't able to do it. So we missed the review of Matrix Reloaded with these fine people here. And I figure, since we got him here, and since it's an interesting show, and there's plenty of things to talk about, I think we should go back over that and add what your guys' comments are on the show.
Everybody give it a number of stars out of 10.
Out of 10?
I give it, if I could give it more than 10, I would give it more than 10.
You give it a perfect 10?
I give it a perfect 10.
See, I would have calibrated based on the first movie being a perfect 10, and then maybe that's why I wasn't as happy with it.
It depends on the feeling you want to leave with when you leave the theater. It's more of like, my idea, it's more, I mean, the action, all that stuff is there, and the story's there, but I think it's like, it's this movie, I base it more on like an intellectualness.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the intellectualness, that's what made it, you know, good in the first place. Plus, on top of the cinematics, is way beyond what people have ever done. So I based the cinematics is way beyond people have ever done. So I base it on that, and the mental part of it is I think beyond the first movie, just because it just gets a little bit. It's not beyond it. It just it adds to it, and it just gets a little deeper. So you get the benefit of the information from the first movie, but you also get the addedness of the second movie, which I mentioned in the last show. You get to see a little bit more of the personalities of how the Matrix world is, and the personality of the computers and the programs, well, not the computers, the programs themselves. So it's interesting that they went into that.
And we get to see Zion.
Yeah, you get to see Zion. It shows, you know, because you're wondering, oh, what's Zion like? You know, you get to see that, and it's just, I think it just builds. Some people I know, like, they'll see the movie, and like, oh, this sucks. You know, we'll go to, like, a certain part where all of a sudden the architect's talking for a long time, or Neo's talking for a long time. They're talking with the Oracle for a long time, and, like, people are like, I heard some comments, people in the theater are like, oh, man, this is boring, and they're just, like, expecting this big, you know, action flick, you know what I mean? And some of it, I think, for some people's minds, it was a little too deep. You know, not saying people are stupid, but they just didn't come to the movie, like, you know, with a thinking cap. They didn't want to think. They just wanted to sit down and relax and watch a movie. They didn't think they had to actually, like, you know, start thinking really, really deep. So some people, I think, that part of the movie flew over them, and then they just focused on the value of, like, you know, the big freeway scene, or, you know, seeing somebody jump really high, or all the kung fu movies.
I think it was also
like
the lack of resolution, because obviously the first movie could pretty much stand on itself even if a sequel hadn't been made, but this is really to segue into Revolution, since they don't get full resolution, you know, on this piece.
See, and I think if someone's gonna, like, diss it for that right there, because some people, like, they're out there like, oh, this sucks, you know, and they're left in the middle. I'm like, you don't understand, this is a trilogy, you know. Maybe they'll even add more.
A trilogy. So what are you guys' ratings?
I think I'd give it a 7 or a 7.5, and the reason why that was, I felt that they, you know, I think the studio put pressure on them to appease a general wider audience, and that's why you had so many people, you know, putting down the brainy part, whereas with me, I enjoyed the Oracle part. I enjoyed the part, you know, with the architect most, and I felt they dwelled too long on the CGs. Like when Neo was spinning, he started looking a little rubbery, you know, and I thought if they would have not felt pressured to show as much over-the-top CG or martial arts and focused more on the philosophical part, you know, because I actually enjoyed the parts where the people were, like, rustling in their chair and go, oh, this sucks, you know, and that sort of thing.
The rubbery part, that I was thinking that was just like with typical, like, motion capture, even doing a 3D animation, you can actually do a, like, an effect that shows that it's, since an object is in motion, you'll actually see a bit of a blur to it.
Exactly.
So, but
I really enjoyed, well, pretty much the whole thing, but the CG, I thought it was really well done, like, the philosophy and everything like that. It could have been really, they could have just coasted off the original, but instead it totally took a tangent to it and blew your mind again by saying that, I guess I won't give any spoilers since none of us have already, but pretty much invalidating a lot of what was done in the first one.
We did in the last show. If you want to, and most people have already seen the movie.
Yeah, just by pretty much saying that everything you believed in, the whole prophecy, was false. I mean, pretty much lived up to the first one. I probably even thought it was better than the first one, but I'd probably give it, there were some things I didn't like about it. I'd probably give it 9 out of 10, though. It was a really great movie to see.
And in all fairness, I mean, it's been 4 years since the last movie, and we've all been speculating a lot, so I think the people who have disappointments is because they may have had a preconceived notion of which direction they wanted it to go.
I've seen the movie 3 times, and every time I saw it, I watched the first one before it. I forgot to add this in the last show, which was really neat. I told you the other day, Meme, do you remember in the first movie when the agents get Neo for the first time and they take him to the interrogation room and you see all those TVs and then it's like zoom in, and he's on the television and they zoom in and it makes that, you know, that sound, that look to where, like, you're now peering into the Matrix?
Yeah.
Those televisions
same
are the architect's televisions.
Yeah.
Exact same televisions.
Well, it's a very astute comment. You were the first person to point that out, and on my second viewing, I noticed it for sure, because I went straight home and looked at that scene, and it was like,
how do you have it?
Hmm?
How did you see that scene? Are you talking about the first one or the second one?
Well, in other words, I watched the original movie, went to see the sequel the same day, and then went right back home and watched it. So I was able to.
Because me and you both know someone that has a perfect copy.
Yes, we do.
Perfect copy.
Oh, really?
Perfect copy.
Gonna have to talk.
It's not like a movie camera one.
Yeah. Honestly, I don't advocate that kind of stuff. I'm going to buy the DVD, though.
I will definitely buy the DVD.
But,
I even went out and bought, you know, the Animatrix, and I actually enjoyed Animatrix
in some ways more
than I did, you know, the Reloaded.
Let's stick to this one for right now. We'll touch on that after that, because I've seen it. What are your thoughts, Bob?
Bob gives The Matrix Reloaded an 8 out of 10.
Awesome. And what did you feel when you watched the movie?
I think, like Meme said, I was pretty much just expecting more. It didn't really live up to my expectations.
You're waiting for that over-the-topness, right?
We had four years to think about this.
Yeah. I kind of liked the first movie, and I didn't like the second movie for the same reason that Meme said. I think it kind of tried to live up to something that could please everybody. And
well, my comment, because, let's see, it's got the action. I had that in the last movie.
Mm-hmm. The action.
Some people whine
great.
About, oh, there's too much sex. If you watch the movie again, actually, if you look at it, there's only one real
scene. A little bumping and grinding.
Which, by the way, well, that was really one of the parts that I didn't like the most, the Zion rave scene. I thought that was unneeded and kind of, here you go, general public,
but
enjoy
that was,
this.
But that was the way, okay, well,
I understand. It was a good way to show.
They did have to show humanity, though. You know,
yeah.
Kind of basically.
They did have to show relationships.
Mess with the machines to say, look, you know, okay, we know you're drilling down here, but we're gonna rock.
Exactly.
Well, this is the movie after, you know, they both find out that they love each other, right?
Mm-hmm.
So they have to show something that shows their affection for each other.
Yeah,
right?
We saw.
They're not gonna give each other a Christmas card. You know what I mean? They're gonna. Yeah. I mean, what do you do when you don't have a world? You know, they can't go watch a movie at the mall. You know, they can't do that. What's left? The age-old things, right? Sex. Okay,
yeah,
so
the whole fetish thing.
You know, and it wasn't too bad. You didn't see everyone naked. You saw Neo's butt, but that's about it. You
know? We got to see their, you know, their implants, and they seemed a little more embellished and reloaded than they did in the first movie. You know, like when Neo, you know, was getting his repair work, it just seems like those socket, you know, nodes on his vertebrae were more pronounced and reloaded. And I'd like to compare them side by side to see if they're embellishing that, because it seemed like they were trying to give it more of a fetishistic eroticism, you know, when they showed them in bed and you see their, you know, sockets on their bodies.
Did those sockets turn you on, Meme, when you saw them?
I admit I'm a closet post-humanist.
So, I don't know. They had to show it in some way. And then I guess, you know, the big rave was some way to show the celebration. They could have, like, done something. I don't know.
They're putting out the wrong message. I mean, nobody was drinking enough water in the rave scene. You know?
What do you mean by that? I'm laughing. I don't quite understand.
I'm alluding to the drug issue.
Oh, yeah.
I guess the thing is that a lot of people take this drug called ecstasy at raves.
Yeah. And then the red pill.
Oh, really? Really? The ones they have commercials about?
Yeah.
Oh. So, yeah. And then, but I don't know. Every sequence seemed to actually, like, fit a purpose. Somebody could think, like, oh, they just did this, you know. But you could do that with, like, every movie.
Yeah.
They're trying to establish point of view, and let's face it, you know, obviously, if you were to run the movies concurrently, there's kind of like a gap, because obviously they had to go back to Zion to pick up replacement crew members, you know, for Tank.
There's a lot of stuff that's left to fill in the blanks, so like, you know, like the ships, the crew, you know, the fact that, like, you know, Dozer and all them are on the crew, and then all of a sudden there's, like, other ships out there and other crews and all this stuff, and you got to think what their backgrounds are and try to understanding that. And
they had to have made a trip back to Zion to get the replacement crew members and all that, so why was he in so much trouble when he came back? You know, because he already would have gotten spanked, you know, going back to get new people.
And then you also have to understand, not understand, but try to guesstimate the background of, like, the hacking the Matrix as far as their pirated signal, which I think is somehow they have some sort of access point, that there's some physical location of wiring or whatever that's part of their Matrix network or whatever, and they, like, attach some sort of snipper or something that gives themselves a node there, and then they have some sort of wireless transmission that connects back to it and gets them in the Matrix, and they're people that are constantly scanning to try to find the ships, which are the squiddies.
And did Morpheus, you know, did he sing, you know, because they were, like, torturing him and everything, or maybe Agent Smith was, like, you know, doing something else with him, because it was just really weird that they knew how to get to Zion, because, of course, they were torturing Morpheus for the purpose of, you know, getting the codes to the servers so they could, you know, get in.
Well, the interesting thing is that the third one, obviously, it seems like it's about between Agent Smith and Neo.
Yeah.
And it seems like Neo...
I'm your father.
Yeah. It seems like, you know, of course, Neo took Agent Smith's purpose, which was, you know, his duty as a program, But Agent Smith now is outside that boundary of the previous instruction set, and he's quite enjoying it, but at the same time, he's quite fueled with anger to destroy Neo, because he took his purpose, and that's going to set him straight, as well as mentally, and as well as he's going to try to take over everything, because he wants full power.
Beep, 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 though, that's a continuity error, and the reason why I say that is, remember when he was lamenting to Morpheus about how sick he was of being in, you know, the construct? And
well, yeah.
So, if that's the case, he should be happy that he's a free agent.
Well, I'm sure he's happy. And, see, it's funny, because it seems like this is what really brought the movie to excitement for me, is that there was more subjects talked about, and more characters involved. And if you examine all their personalities and like the types of things that make them tick, as they've shown throughout the movie, through the movies, they really totally fit to character. And you know, yeah, Agent Smith wants to get out. Why does he want to get out? It seems like they alluded that programs have some sort of feeling in a way. They don't want to be deleted. Some of them might get sick and tired of running the same old routine, right?
Self-awareness.
Yeah, but the funny thing is that they actually have to do it, because that's how they're programmed. They have to continually do it. So he maybe got sick and tired of it, but he had to continually do it. Maybe the program breaks down, which is what they said. They code new versions of it, yada, yada, yada. So, like, all that stuff seemed to fit just right in, you know? And, like, when, like, Morpheus was fighting those invisible characters that would go invisible and then come back, he realized that he couldn't fight them. So, what an intelligent move. They're in an automobile. What's the only way they could really get to destroy him at that point in time?
But let's talk about the upgrades now on that very subject. Is it possible that, you know, obviously by the title Reloaded, you have to wonder if there were significant upgrades, you know, that took place in terms of what the agents were capable of and so on. Perhaps everything else has changed, too. I mean, it really begged the question for me was, you know, is Neo a program, like we had talked about last
time? Yeah. I didn't think about that. Well, because they're Reloaded. I didn't think about that. Matrix,
yeah.
Reloaded.
Well, I mean, it's like I tried to start...
Because at the end, it reloaded.
Well, see, that was the whole point, was at the very end, Neo says, you know, I'm about to show these people something that you don't want them to see. A world without rules, a world without boundaries, a world without you. Yeah, where we go next is up to you. So he leaves us with that ultimatum, and he flies. You know, so Neo is come to another level, and he's discovered his powers, obviously, because, you know, he came back to life. And so it's obvious that there are upgrades on both sides. You know, the agents are countering, you know, Neo's epiphany and the fact that now he's got more power than he did before. And then when they go back to Zion, they're saying, well, we've unplugged more people in the last 6 months than we have in the last 6 years. So it makes you wonder, just how long has the resistance been going?
Well, because we make something... I don't know if Neo's a program. Either way, he could have gotten more intelligent based on, you know,
yeah,
just learning and flexing his skills and stuff like that. Well, the thing is that some people believe, and I'm a believer, that to some degree that Zion's another control, I think. And I could be wrong, but I think that's what it is based on a few things. I think when you watch the third movie, you'll go back and you'll wonder, why does Morpheus say, get that ship as ready as humanly possible? You know,
mm-hmm.
Maybe...
because he's using it as a metaphor, man.
Yeah, they don't put those kinds of things in movies just because that was how it was scripted. It was, in this movie, that's specifically said for some reason.
I agree.
And some people think that Morpheus may be a program, actually.
And when his ship got blown up, remember when the Nebuchadnezzar got blown up, he made a comment about his dream or something. Yeah.
All right. Well, I think that's because he used to believe in the fact that there was this, you know, that once Neo's the one, and once he does this, that there no longer be a problem. I think that's what he was talking about.
Mm-hmm.
So he used to dream that dream was the truth, that legend would happen, but it didn't. So I think that's
yeah,
what that had to do with.
And there was no rapture.
Yeah. And well, the one thing that doesn't quite have full explaining is when the architect said, we have destroyed Zion multiple times, and we are getting extremely efficient at it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what does that mean?
Well, it's an iterative process. I mean, software, you know, has multiple versions, and each time you make a refinement based on all the bugs and things that you come across, you do some fixes.
He was talking about how the revelation that, what was it, the 11th Zion?
That's
what he was saying.
The 6th.
Yeah, you're right. It was 6.
The 6th. He was saying that they created a Zion that the One was created for the purposes of giving the humans a choice to either accept or reject the Matrix, which was necessary for them to become compatible with whatever programs were running in the Matrix so that the machines could use them for power, and that to keep that in control, that they destroyed Zion every once in a while and then created another One. The One was part of the process, which gives the humans a choice. So this was the fifth iteration. And they also said that it had been 100 years since that their resistance had been going. I believe they said
it's
kind of
like the Y2K bug. I mean, obviously, you know, when all these embedded systems and software were created in our world, you know, they didn't foresee the fact that, okay, we'll get around to fixing the Millennium bug, you know, and they procrastinated. And you have to wonder, could the Matrix have been the same way, and that they make something less than perfect because they had to do it so quick, because the war between the machines and the humans was such that when we blacked out the sky, the machines were under serious duress, you know, to preserve themselves, and so they struck a truce, you know, and created some sort of, you know, imposed symbiosis, but they're under the gun to do it. And when people develop software under the gun, it's not fully refined and it's buggy, and then they say, well, we'll get around to fixing it later, you know. And maybe that's the thing, is they get to a critical flash point where everything's about to just fall apart, and then they, you know, they reboot.
But that's why he said we destroyed Zion multiple times, we're getting efficient in it.
But they're lazy.
Then they're talking about, what was it, like, I got the numbers on the show last show wrong. It was like 7 men and like 11 females or whatever that they'd leave in there, and then they'd repopulate it. And then also, like, I don't know, you guys didn't really touch on it, that it's not just for the exterior war of making them, like, power cells and stuff like that on the outside. It's also because, and you guys already probably know this, is that they cannot predict the choices that the humans will make. They can have an educated guess, and they said that there's a margin of error, and then once that error, if there's somebody that makes, there's a probability that someone will make the, you know, correct, and there's not one line, but the correct decisions and choices to basically circumvent the Matrix, because their type of control doesn't control that type of thing. And then he noticed that he said, you were quicker this time at saying that, you know, because he noticed that Neo was smarter, and because since they close that gap a little bit more in the Matrix as far as the error that they allow, because they basically assimilate the old Neos and then try to rebuild the Matrix based on some theories through the code of the person that actually made it outside the box of what the Matrix controls, is that they're more intelligent every time, which is a neat thing. So see, all that there like made sense. I couldn't really find like flaws in the story, or like,
no,
oh,
I didn't
make
either.
Sense, or like, oh, what the hell, or like, why do you do that? That's not like his character. That's why this movie, I can say, like, just being so well thought out. Like, I even think,
Lauren, here are my predictions for the third one. Zion is not fake, it's actual real place. Neo has some relationship with the machines in particular, which will be the plot of the third one, that some special relationship between him and Agent Smith in particular, and the rest of the machines, that he's going, he wants to make peace with the machines or something like that. Mm-hmm. Perhaps Morpheus is jaded and he doesn't want to, but in the end he comes around and he's redeemed. Maybe if anybody dies, it's going to be Morpheus, like sacrificing his life or something like that. And the humans and machines have to try and live in peace somehow in some way. That's my predictions.
Well, I'm going to be, you know, just totally off the wall and say I think Theodore Kaczynski was the original one. Just joking, by the way.
Okay, not even going to touch on that.
All right. Well, I think we're going to have to wrap the show. We'll do review of the Animatrix possibly in the next show, because not everyone's seen it. All right. Well, good show, everyone. I will be signing out. We'll see everybody in 2 weeks.
This is Bob saying goodbye.
This is Spike saying, if you can't stand the heat, get out of the oven.
And this is Meme, stand by for further upgrades.
All right. We'll see everybody in 2 weeks. Have a good night.